Blog Talk Radio.
Because we know of no other media that talks about Eastern and its people on a weekly basis, live and on the air. Tell your airline friends about us and invite them to reach us by telephone at 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. Let me repeat those numbers, 213-816-1611. Or toll-free at 877-572-1861. Once they reach us, all they have to do is have them press number 1, which is what you did, I'm sure, and it brings them right into the studio and on the air with us. Wow, what a show we had last week. If you want to know about Aviation Hall of Fames, then you need to listen to the archived episode number 101. We're coming to you from our cyber satellite radio station serving over 40 countries around the world. You're listening to our 102nd live broadcast. Our on-the-air hosts each week are Margaret Bars, Bill Joseph, Steve Thompson, Chuck Albright, Howard Mucci, Neil Holland, and me, Jim Hart. We're scattered all over the United States. And Margaret and Neil are in Jacksonville. How are things up there with you guys tonight?
Well, thanks for asking, Jim. We're great here in Jacksonville, and it has been a bit overcast today, and we have temperatures falling into the upper 40s tonight. But all in all, it's a nice little change. However, just a little warning for those of you planning to visit the Jacksonville area. Our pollen count is climbing to very high in the next few days due to the pine and cedar trees.
This is Neil, and would you believe that I actually predicted the score last night in the big game?
Really?
Yeah. No, not really. Oh. But I did predict that Baltimore would win the game, and I didn't have any money on it. So, at any rate, I like to brag over the air, so... Margaret, it has been pretty nice here lately. A little bit of pollen, but we're forecast to have a little bit of rain, so perhaps that'll clear the trees, a little bit of that pollen. But it's beautiful here in Northeast Florida. And, Jim, back to you.
Let me see. Bill Joseph, way out there in ski country, Grand Junction, Colorado. What's new in the Centennial State today?
Good evening, Jim and listeners. I have a 43-degree temperature right now as I look out my window. Clear skies. You can see as far as you want. I'm going to give you the ski report because I'm hoping that some of the folks out there are considering a trip out to Colorado. And I'm going to list some of our major ski areas. The first would be Aspen, where they have a 31-inch base. 6 of 8 lifts are operating, and the conditions are packed powder. Crested Butte has a 40-inch base, 12 of 16 lifts operating, powder or packed powder. Steamboat, north of Denver, 54 inches base, 16 lifts all working, powder, or pack powder again. And Vail has a 37-inch base, 31 out of 31 lifts operating, and again, pack powder. Come on out. The snow is wonderful. Back to you, Jim.
Oh, what's going on up there in the Tar Heel State, Steve?
Well, Jim, we can match Bill with his temperatures, and we not quite as much snow, but for those of us who are over 80, we can ski free. And I don't think that that's an option if you go to Colorado. So
break leaves.
It's been break cold and nice, and here in Roaring Gap, the snow's all gone.
Steve, how did North Carolina get the nickname of the Tar Heel State?
That's a good question, Jim, and I can tell you that during the days of colonialism and mercantilism, North Carolina was important for supplies of naval stores, tar, pitch, and lumber. Naval stores and tar were often identified with North Carolina, which was often overshadowed by its neighbors, Virginia and South Carolina. During the Revolutionary War, occasionally stories say Civil War, but most reliable sources say the Revolutionary War, it said that the North Carolina soldiers put tar on their heels so they could hold their ground. Therefore, they became the Tar Heels. The term then became applied to the University of North Carolina, since the university was the first state-owned university in the nation. It became known as the University of North Carolina's Tar Heels, which they still go by to this day, Jim.
Oh, that's great. Chuck Albright, same question to you. How about Florida's official state nickname? How did that come about?
Well, Florida's official nickname is, of course, the Sunshine State. It was adopted in 1970 by the Florida State Legislature. The nickname Sunshine State was first used on license plates in 1949. In fact, it was legally required on all the plates. And the Sunshine State, they got its name because of the climate, the amount of sunshine we have all year round. Jim?
Hey, Jim, before we go to Howard, we've got, I think, Jan, are you with us tonight? Jan Booksky?
Frank is.
Okay, Frank. Tell us about where you are calling from, and give us your name and where you are.
Frank Maxwell. 503-002.
Okay, Atlanta, Georgia, right?
No, Lake Worth, Florida.
Oh, Lake Worth, Florida. Frank, good having you with us tonight.
Yeah, I just never tried this before, and I said to the wife, Leslie, she's here listening. I got down the loudspeaker, and just thought I'd give a call and say good evening to everybody, and it's a wonderful thing you're doing.
Hey, Frank, good to hear from you. Great that you called in. And tell us, you were with Eastern, and where did you work with Eastern? What did you do? Where were you based?
I started out in Boston in 1945, saw the moon over Miami. My wife and I transferred to Miami in 58 and left there and transferred to West Palm Beach when it opened up to ramp service, and I did a lead job up there as a ramp serviceman. I was there for 14 years and retired in 1983.
Very good. So great having you with us tonight, and we hope you'll call in often. And tell us a little bit about... Yeah, go ahead,
yeah,
Jim.
Frank Maxwell is a member of the Palm Beach chapter of EARA.
Okay, so
it's
you
good
see...
Good to hear you, Frank.
That's right.
Well, you guys see each other every month or so, right?
Yes, sir. We go up to the Pegasus Restaurant.
Yeah, well, who's the president of that chapter?
That's me.
I just wanted to put a plug in for you, Jim.
There you go.
Very good. Very good. Frank, so nice having you with us tonight.
Okay,
also, we have, Jim, you we're going to introduce our other host, who is Howard, Howard Mucci.
Howard?
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
Oh, I'm doing just fine for a nonagenarian. It's you young folks that had better look after yourselves if you want to make it to this exclusive club. Actually, I'm about 50 miles away from Margaret and Neil. The truth is, they won't let me come into the studios, and they make me do the show over the phone.
Now, Howard, you know that's not true. The actual reason is that Luann has a crush on you, and we just don't want you to get into trouble with your wife, Lou.
Now, folks, you know what a nonagenarian is. That's a person that's 90 years of age or older, octogenarian for 80 years or older, and up until nonagenarian. But Howard, I think, is celebrating his 91st birthday or 92nd. I'm not clear about that. I think he's trying to hide his age. But at any rate, Howard?
Yes, that's probably true. But then I'm always in trouble with my wife. I sure would like to get into trouble with Luann, though, but I can't quite remember how to go about it. That's my problem.
Howard, this is Steve Thompson, and I think you should tell Lou that she is far much more attractive than the other women that I've seen you with.
Oh.
I'm going to pass that along to Howard. Okay, I think he just dropped off the line.
Well, thank you, host. And now let's tell you about our show for tonight. But first, let's hear an Eastern commercial.
Okay, Jim, I'm going to say goodbye.
America's favorite way to fly, we thank you. If you haven't flown Eastern recently, give us a try. We'll show you we really do earn our wings every day.
Let me, Bill, before you start a little bit of your information that you want to give us, let me see if I can get Jim Graybill on the line. Just a moment, folks. Let's see if we can call in to our guest that we had last week, Jim Graybill, Captain Jim Graybill, who is in the Kentucky Aviation Hall of Fame. We're going to try to connect with Jim right now. Well, I thought we would, but Bill, go ahead and take over, and I'll see if I can get him on the line off air, okay?
Eastern Airlines has been chosen to introduce the first service of its kind, unmanned aerial vehicle, or UAV. Since the requirements call for an onboard pilot, flight engineer, having knowledge of the special onboard equipment, the flight will not be as anonymous as our minds would ideate. There will be a seat up front. Boeing has designated the new aircraft as its model B-818, featuring auto-servo responders, ASRs, and a host of other electronic gadgetry. We are in Eastern Miami UAV Control Center. That's a duplicate of Boeing's simulator center in Everett, Washington. And Captain Steve is briefing the press. Let's listen in.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is not the first flight of a pilotless crew. We've been flying air cargo around the world now for the past 5 years. And, of course, we have been using military drone aircraft to protect America for several years. This is the first time for a robotic cabin crew, however. I'll leave that briefing to those who will be directing in-flight service, and that'll be Mrs. Bars and Ms. Boscaia. First of all, let me tell you about pilot training for the unmanned flight. Its flight is either controlled anonymously by computers in the vehicle or under the remote control of a pilot on the ground or in another vehicle. Our inaugural flight will be the latter, remote control by a pilot on the ground. However, as a safety feature, we do have an onboard electronic and avionic specialist. This person can also fly the aircraft by remote input to the aircraft's servo system. Now, let me tell you what's required for those involved in this pilotless aircraft. Now, today, a manned aircraft pilot completes underground and graduate pilot training programs at the cost of approximately $250,000 per pilot. They've cut the normal cost, which is about $2 million per pilot, down by eliminating 20 unnecessary weeks of the current undergraduate pilot training program, deleting unnecessary graduate training on other aircraft, and adding an 8-week UAV undergraduate course and 12 weeks of UAV graduate training. The cost, excuse me, the report estimates would be a little more. We have with us today Mr. Mucci from the FAA. Mr. Mucci?
A few years ago, Chief of Staff of the Air Force, General Norton Schwartz, unveiled plans to create a UAV-specific career that would train officers with no flying experience to control predators and reapers, all generally known as drones. This led to a whole new line of thought about training in conjunction with commercial airlines. The officers selected would be the first to go through the training program designed to get pilots who didn't complete the undergraduate pilot training into UAV flight training instead. When their training was completed, they would receive their UAV wings. We selected Eastern Airlines to be a co-sponsor of this program, and we can say that we are both very happy with the results and success of our first class. Another 10 candidates will start training this summer and will get their UAV wings in January, at which point Eastern will decide if it wants to expand the training pipeline. Developing a UAV-specific career and thereby reducing unnecessary training will reduce costs by more than $1.5 billion in aviation fuel savings alone, with another potential savings of about $180 million. This will make funds available for other flying training necessary for our war effort requirements.
Thank you, Mr. Mucci, for the report of the FAA's participation in this newest era of commercial aviation. Eastern has invested over $500 million in its new training center here in Miami. There's nothing else like it in the world. For an airline, that is, Boeing has the original and the main control center. Boeing and the FAA have identified 18 human factor topics unique to UAV. Here they are: automation issues, flight controls, degraded reliability, see and avoidance automation, takeoff and landing automation, pilot interface issues, control interface options, data requirements, display augmentation, multi-model displays, display and control standardization, pilot decision-making, air traffic management procedural issues, controls hands-off, data link delay, data link loss, crew qualifications, 5, crew size, KSA requirements, training qualifications, and medical qualifications. A ranking was performed on these issues, though, through the highest priority for the FAA. 5 issues were selected for further study back in 2006. Number 1, whether and how much experience pilot in a manned aircraft should be required for UA pilot certifications. Whether is required should vary across UA types. Assess, compare, and the effectiveness of human performance of the variety of existing interface design and explore possible future designs. Assess air traffic controllers and UA operator compensatory responses to time delays in communication and to determine the impact of communication delay on air traffic flow. 4, define what the UA should be programmed to do in case of a total loss of GCS UA control loop communications. 5, determine the desirability and the appropriate level of automation for takeoff and landing for a variety of vehicles in the civilian airspace of high-density air traffic. Steve?
Yes. McCarley and Wickens of the Institute of Aviation at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, in April of 2005, published a human factors implication of UAVs in the national airspace. This report summary from a similar 2004 study. As academics, not surprisingly, they recommend further research to determine the circumstances under which various modes of UAV flight control, fully automated, partially automated, manual, are appropriate. Determine whether or not the level of automated flight control should be reconfigured, such that the operator can alternate between levels of control when he or she deems appropriate. Determine whether the reconfiguration of flight control should itself be adaptively automated, such that the UAV system adjusts the level of automated flight control to match the current circumstances, in other words, current communication delay between the UAV and the GCS. Or determine how and when the UAV operator will be allowed to override the automated flight control system. So you see that many years of military operations and study of pilots, engineers, air traffic controllers, psychologists, aircraft designers, and many other studies were made before we ever reached this point of carrying the first human payload from one point to another. And the day has arrived on this beautiful February 7th day of 2025. Bill.
Back in 2008, the flying of unmanned planes had taken a major step forward after a BAE Systems-led team flew a plane over 800 miles without human intervention. The BAE-led team modified a Jetstream passenger plane in order for it to fly pilotless on a series of missions totaling over 800 miles within British airspace. It is believed that this is the first time a regular passenger plane has accomplished such a feat. During the testing, however, the plane was operated in a similar fashion to an unmanned aerial vehicle. While there was no pilot on board, a team of operators on the ground monitored and controlled the functions and movement of the plane. BAE officials see the development as a benefit to both the commercial and defense sectors. In the future, unmanned commercial aircraft would be able to fly the same routes over and over again without worries about pilot fatigue. Similarly, in defense, sorties and transport missions could be flown around the clock, since the unmanned planes would be able to operate when air crews could not. The system would also be able to fill shortages in mission requirements and flight demands. Now I'm going to turn the podium over to our senior flight attendant, who, by the way, is FAA certified as UAV CCMC, Cabin Crew Member Controller. Senior CCMC, Margaret Bars. It's all yours.
Thank you, Bill. First of all, I would like for all of you in the press to know that all my CCMC staff will be working each unmanned flight assigned to them. However, the manner in which they'll serve on board the unmanned aircraft will be different than the traditional services provided the traveling public slash passengers. Our work will be conducted here in the Miami UAV Control Center, serving the passengers through the onboard passenger robotic attendant, or as we like to call her, Oprah. The voice and vision on board the aircraft is Oprah, serves each passenger and answers their questions, and that will be through their imaging and audio system and transmitted instantly to the cabin crew member controller for actions taken by Oprah. Now, Oprah is self-contained with food and beverages and has voice recognition to respond to most requests from the passengers. The CCMC here in the Miami UAV Control Center operating a flight will answer more specific detailed questions and provide all passenger briefings, as well as provide information of the actual flight path of the aircraft by a moving map of the exact location of the aircraft. As you know, our aircraft has the interior designed into the first B787 Dreamliner with many extra features. Service should be a simple task for our Oprah attendants, as the comfortable passenger models, or modules rather, CPMs, all but replace the up and down the aisle flight attendants of the old generation aircraft.
We have come to the end of the briefing, and the first UAV flight will soon be boarding. We hope you will listen to a future broadcast planned for the actual flight as carried out by the certified UAV pilots and CCMC crew. Check for scheduling on our website under the calendar page. Jim?
We have a commercial.
Than any other airline in the free world. If you've helped make us America's favorite way to fly, we thank you. If you haven't flown Eastern recently, give us a try. We'll show you we really do earn our wings every day.
Dateline, Portland, Oregon. An Alaska Airlines plane made an emergency landing in Portland, Oregon, Thursday night after the pilot lost consciousness. The co-pilot on flight number 473 from Los Angeles to Seattle made the landing at Portland International Airport a little after 9 p.m. local time, according to Paul McElroy, a spokesman for Alaska Airlines. McElroy said the pilot suffered from a medical condition, but declined to name specifics, citing company policies. The Boeing 737-700, carrying 116 passengers and five crew members, landed safely. It is unclear whether the passengers were told of the pilot's condition. A doctor on board tended to the pilot after he passed out as a co-pilot took control of the plane, McElroy said. Portland Fire Department and other emergency workers met the plane at the gate, McElroy said. The pilot was taken away in an ambulance and brought to a hospital, according to McElroy. The airline has not identified the pilot, but said he has been flying with Alaska Airlines for 28 years. The first officer has been flying for Alaska Airlines for 11 years. The flight crew was flown in and the remaining passengers continued to Seattle on the same plane overnight. Neil?
Well, we've got a call in for Jim Graybill. Let's see if we can connect with Jim at this time. Well, apparently unable to make the connection. I'll continue to try. But, Jim, or Steve, you've been in the training department with Eastern. What are your thoughts about the way the press treats the first officer as not being fully qualified, quote mark, qualified, to fly the aircraft? Steve, do you have any comments?
Yes, Neil. As with the case in much reporting by the press, they don't have the facts, or the facts take away from the sensational effect of the story. So they make up their own false and inaccurate accounts to accomplish their purpose. In my experience in training, the first officer gets the same training as the captain, with except for a couple of maneuvers. The only difference is that he sits in a different seat. And we always emphasize to the first officer that if the captain became incapacitated, he or she should fly the airplane from the same seat normally occupied and not change seats. And there was another practice that was common and
Hello?
Emphasized.
Hang on a second, Steve. I've got Jim Graybill on the line. Steve, go ahead. And Jim, would you hold, please?
There was another practice that we tried to emphasize was that that the two pilots not eat the same order from a restaurant if they were eating, or the same crew meal on the airplane.
Okay.
Go ahead, Neil.
Jim, we've been talking about the training of a first officer. Can you hear me, Jim, okay?
Yeah, I got you now, Neil.
Okay, very good. I've tried to make a couple of calls to you, and apparently I'm messing up on my dialing. But at any rate, glad you're here with us, and thanks a lot for last week. You did a great job in telling us about the Hall of Fame of Kentucky. But tonight we're talking a little bit about the training of a first officer, and in the event a captain becomes incapacitated, like happened just last week when the captain entered the cabin area and actually became unconscious, and they actually had to land the airplane and the first officer. But I believe a captain, we've already read the story and the accounting for that. But what's your thoughts? Since you were in the training department of Eastern, what's your thoughts about the training of a first officer? And should passengers really be concerned that one pilot, of course, you know, anytime one pilot is capacitated, that means that only one person is left to fly the airplane. So what's your thoughts about that?
Well, Neil, on my experience with all of this, there's not a heck of a lot of difference between the training of the captain and the first officer. All the time with Eastern in the training department, I don't know, Steve can probably, you know, could grab at this also. Their training was not really not a lot of difference than training a captain. The number of landings they got were about the same. They were the same. All the training down at Flight Safety International, both the captain and the co-pilot on these things were type-rated, so their training was the same. I don't see a lot of difference, and I really don't understand why anybody wants to make that up for that issue.
You're right, Jim. You recall another emergency landing was made by a JetBlue plane in emergency after a captain's apparent mental breakdown. I've had the word mental breakdown because I guess that's actually what happened. The second pilot takes charge while the passengers restrain the captain, and it was on flight 191 of this particular airline. He ran around the cabin shouting, "They're taking us down. They're taking us down." And the captain breaks down, screaming, "They're going to take us down," as passengers attempt to pin him to the floor. And this was on a major carrier. the captain of this plane screamed, "They're going to take us down," and rambled about Al-Qaeda as passengers pinned him to the floor while another pilot took charge to make an emergency landing. An off-duty airline captain who was a passenger on the flight entered the cockpit, locked the door, and landed in Amarillo, Texas, the airline said in their statement. But here, you know, we never know when something like this will happen in flight. Whether it's the captain or co-pilot or a flight attendant or a passenger. Steve?
Yes, and Jim, this is Steve. I've reiterated what you reported and your feelings about this, and I went on to tell them that one of the things that we emphasized in the event of an emergency was that the co-pilot fly the airplane from the seat that he normally flies in and not switch seats with the captain.
Exactly.
And also a couple of other things that we talked about was that we encouraged the crews not to eat the same, the two pilots not to eat, order the same meal in a restaurant or order the, or eat the same meal in the airplane, in the cockpit.
Okay, so, for both of you guys, Steve and Jim, do you know of any training or have you ever heard of any training that addresses the crew member becoming mentally deranged like the captain on this JetBlue? I mentioned the airline, didn't I? But like the captain on this particular flight became, you know, to the point that he went down the aisles. Do you know of any training like that that's out there at the airlines? Of course, you guys don't know like myself. I don't know now what they are training. But in the event of an occurrence like this, what should the other crew member do?
This is Steve, Jim, and I'm not aware of any specific training.
I'm not either, Neil. Jim Grable. I've never heard of any episode or anything. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I can tell you that this is probably the most dangerous situation that a cockpit crew member would incur would be whether the other one became mentally unstable, as has happened on his JetBlue flight.
Yeah.
Well, too, you know, if and here we're getting into ifs now. Captain became deranged and stay in the cockpit, I still think the first officer is more than capable of doing putting that airplane down on the ground any place that they choose. I just don't see that is a big issue with the first officer.
Well, we don't have many three-man crew or three-persons crew, I should say, today operating in the air anymore. Most of the aircraft, such as the L-1011, DC-8s, and 727s, are mostly gone from the American Airways. So there are only two people flying the airplane. But do you think it important for one person to have someone from the cabin to come and help perform duties, or do you think the first officer can perform all of the duties on a two-man aircraft?
Jim, Neil, I definitely think it could. With the training that the first officer and the captain get together, I know with Eastern and more particularly with flight safety, there's really not that much difference. I see no problem with either one of the gentlemen flying up there, captain and the first officer. If they have to make an emergency landing, they're both capable of doing it.
Yeah. Neil?
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
I researched this Alaska Airlines situation, and we were talking about why the press puts out the information it does and degrades the first officer.
Exactly.
For example, this piece is incorrect in that when that airplane landed, it did not taxi to the gate. It stopped on the runway, and the emergency people came aboard on the runway. The first thing that people asked was, well, why didn't he get off the runway and take the airplane to another place? On a 737 airplane, the tiller, or steering wheel for the nose gear, is only located on the pilot side of the cockpit.
Yeah.
And as Steve said earlier, the first officer is encouraged to stay in his own seat where he's familiar, and therefore couldn't reach this tiller, which would give him 70 degrees either way on the nose steering wheel. Another thing that comes up, that airplane was towed to the gate. It was not driven under its own power to the gate, and that's why these stories get so confused and convoluted when they're put out.
Very good point, Bill. And I just referenced a three-man crew. There are certain duties that it would be difficult for one person to carry out in an aircraft that had three cockpit crew members. Wouldn't you guys agree, especially on the fuel and the air conditioning or pressurization of the aircraft, it would be very difficult. Of course, there is a crew member, and assuming that the captain is incapacitated, I guess, Steve, and Jim, you both mentioned that the first officer should fly the airplane from the first officer's seat. And, of course, the second officer would be at the control panel. So understand that. Very good. Very good. Interesting. And but I just was curious as to perhaps there ought to be some training by the carriers in the event that one of the crew members, the flight deck crew members, does become deranged and takes a leave of absence, you might say, of the mind. So what do you do in a situation like that, especially a co-pilot? It might be on probation. You know, we've always been told we're on probation. We always do whatever the captain asks us to do, and we're afraid to interfere with anything in flight. Someone had a comment?
Yeah, this is Steve, Neil. I could just about guarantee you that this incident where the pilot became mentally out of whack, that scenario is reviewed now at every single recurrent training and initial qualification for airline pilots. That's the kind of training that I could just bet money that exists today after that incident.
I agree with you, Steve. Jim, you too, probably.
Yeah, I totally agree. But I think too that, you know, this whole thing has kind of gotten blown out of proportion. But anyway.
Well, usually any kind of aircraft incident in flight, whether it's weather or whether it's a terrorist or an incident with the passengers or one of the crew members. Steve, you're right. It seems like we all, in the past, and I can recall my own training, in the past, we always had simulated events in the simulator when we took our recurrent training, as you recall.
It is a very, very scary event where one crew member has a motive other than getting the airplane on the ground safely and reacted as the way that this JetBlue captain did.
Well, we've got thank you very much for your input, all of you guys, and we appreciate it. And it was kind of a different type of programming we had tonight, but eventually, unmanned flight with airlines will happen. It probably won't be here while I'm here, but I project about 2025. I read some information from those people that have the technology experience, and they kind of can foresee into the future the events of aviation down the line. I think that we will have unmanned especially cargo flight. It's going to probably be a little longer. And like our little skit said tonight, we'll always have an onboard representative. But we have a special celebration tonight for someone that's with us tonight. And I want to do this little thing here. So if you'll bear with me, I'll see if I can get her to chime in. Just a moment.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Oh.
Happy birthday, Mr. President. Happy birthday to you.
No, Jim, it's not Marilyn Monroe. But we thought you would enjoy that, especially this being your birthday. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct, Neil. I've vowed today not to have any more birthdays.
Did you recognize the voice there?
Somewhat, yeah. Yeah.
It's your fellow Kentuckian, Margaret.
Hi, Margaret.
How are you? And happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you, ma'am.
And how are things in Kentucky, by the way?
Snow. All the schools have been closed here in Lexington for the last 2 days. Roads are today have kind of opened up a little bit. It's we've had about 3 or 4 inches of snow here in the last 2 days.
Okay. All right.
I guess 3 or 4 inches doesn't compare to what you have out in the west side. That is.
You're talking about Bill Joseph? No.
Yeah. Well, they have 2 or 3 feet of snow.
I gave the ski report earlier. You should have been listening.
I've got this new computer. I really fouled things up on that. I have to apologize to you, Neil.
Yeah. You know, some time ago, I told Neil we have the biggest flat top mountain in the world here, right outside of Grand Junction, Colorado. And they ski up there, and he wanted to know why and how. And I sent him a picture of them skiing up there, and right now they've got 4 feet of base powder right up there.
How can you ski in 4 feet of powder?
Didn't you look at the picture I sent you?
Yeah, I did. I showed it to Margaret, too.
Well, hey, EAL listeners, do you have an Eastern experience that you think might be developed into a radio skit? You know, we're always looking for true, real-life experiences that can be developed into a script and played by our cast. Perhaps you recall a few we did last year. One in particular was Flight 855, and that comes to mind. It was a real drama event with the L-1011 flight and cabin crew over the Atlantic Ocean, in which they lost all three of their engines. Our regular host, Captain Steve Thompson, provided the minute-to-minute description of that frightful event. It was actually made into a skit for the radio cast to deliver to our listeners. Now, you don't have to write a long story, just some brief details, and our writers will do the rest. It's fun to send yours in, too, and we'd love for you to send them in to host@ealradioshow.com. Let me repeat that again. That's host@ealradioshow.com. Also, tell us what you'd like to hear on your radio show, and we'll see if we can bring it to you. And with more material and information and things that matter to our Eastern family. Jim?
Do you have a business you would like to promote on our weekly shows? We offer that possibility by becoming one of our regular sponsors. You can even do the narration from your radio spot or let one of our hosts deliver your advertising message for you. Email us at host@ealradioshow.com to learn more. Some businesses that would have a good fit on our shows are real estate, insurance, mortgage companies, retail services, website design service, computer consulting and repair services, just to name a few. put your business on our next show. Chuck.
Make your plans now for the upcoming Eastern Airlines Flight Attendant Reunion, Saturday, March 9th, at the Miami Springs Country Club. Cash bar opens at 11:30 a.m. with a buffet luncheon to follow. The cost is $32 per person. Reservations must be made by March 1st. Please send check along with the following information. Name for your name tag, address, phone number, email address, to 2228 Wildwood Hollow Drive, Waikaria, Florida, 33596. The contact is Beverly LaPointe. This notice can also be found in February's issue of the EARA Kit newspaper and on the EAL Radio Show website. Steve?
Yes, and Chuck, I think kudos are due to EARA for the fourth time in a row. Eastern Airlines Retiree Association has been selected for the 2012 Annual Best of Miami Springs Award in the Association's category by the U.S. Commerce Association. And in recognition of their achievement, a special 2012 Best of Miami Springs Award has been designed for display at their office.
Any other announcements by any of our hosts? I'd like to just add the fact that all of our listeners should go to our website, and we will give it to you again, or I'll give it to you again, www.EALradioshow.com. I think we are the only type of radio show in existence today for the airline's employees, present or past, in our case, of course, past employees. And we try to bring you the information that our members, which we have over 700, I think we have 748 members now, of our radio show club. We might call it a club, but listeners and those folks are members. We'd like to welcome anyone that would like to join our radio website to go to www.EALradioshow.com and just register. All you need to do is type your name in and register. And we'd like to, especially if you're an Eastern employee, a former employee, tell us where you worked, when you worked, and so forth in the profile, and we'd be happy to put you into our membership. There is a $10 one-time charge to join our radio website, and, of course, you're always welcome to listen in to our radio shows, which we have every week at 7 p.m., and as Jim mentioned earlier, we're listened to now in over 40 countries around the world, and we have average listenership every week of about 1,100, 1,200 people. Sometimes we have up to, I think the highest we've had is over 3,000 in 1 week. So we're very happy about our progress that we've made over 2 years and 102 episodes, which are all available on the website or at the radio show that you tuned in, EAL, blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie, and you can listen to any of the 102 episodes. Jim?
Gee, our sign-off bumper music tells me that we're just about out of time for this week's show. We hope you have enjoyed hearing our skit presentation of what may be in the future and the open discussion by our host of flight deck crew emergencies. Thanks, Jim Graybill, for joining with us, and hope you'll come back for steady work on our show as soon as you can. As you know, all of our radio shows go by episodes and episode numbers, and we are about to put our number 102nd broadcast into the radio archives where you may listen again to this episode or any of the 102 during the past 2 years that we have been broadcasting. Tell your friends about the show. More importantly, get involved with the rest of our hosts by participating in the ways mentioned tonight. We are proud of the fact that this show is the only airline company radio show of its kind. It's part of the way we are keeping the memory of Eastern Airlines alive. Well, that's all for tonight. And from all of your hosts, we say good night, Eastern family and friends.
Good night.
Good night,
everybody.
Good night. Good night.